Hi, this is Malayan Verveer.
And this is Kim Azzarelli.
We are co-authors of the book, Fast Forward, How Women Can Achieve Power and Purpose.
And you're listening to Seneca Women, Conversations on Power and Purpose, brought to you by the Seneca Women Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. Katie Couric is one of the most successful women in media. She was the first woman to solo anchor a nightly TV newscast. And for 15 years, she was the incredibly popular co-anchor of NBC's Today Show. Katie has broken news, made headlines, and won just about every journalism award possible. And she's done that while overcoming the gender bias that has pervaded much of broadcast media. Katie sat down with Milan during the Seneca Women Forum at the New York Stock Exchange. Listen to their conversation and hear how Katie deals with the Boys Club, how she handles critics, and why she's now focusing on creating quality content with purpose-driven partners. And stick around after the conversation to hear our top takeaways. We'll be back after this break.
I feel like I'm the only thing between you all and a cocktail. I feel really bad about this, but hi.
You're going to be so glad that you're here and stayed for this. We've been talking about transforming culture, and I think there are a few people who've had such an impact on our culture as you have, Katie Couric. So welcome, and it's just great to have you here. You know, I was thinking, I spent my mornings with you for 15 years in a row when you were the co-anchor of the Today Show. And when we look at your achievements from best-selling author to award-winning journalist to the co-founder of Stand Up to Cancer, that organization within 10 years has raised $500 million for scientists and researchers. That's extraordinary. You know, these are the kinds of things we don't know about her. And now she's the head of Katie Couric Media, working on really extraordinary topics that are so important and which you are bringing to our attention and hopefully that we will respond to in ways that we should care more about them. But I want to start with your becoming the first female anchor of a major network evening news. And I know from what I've heard from you in the past that it was not the easiest job. It was fraught with challenges. In fact, I think you referred to the Boys Club. And that might be something
Me?
Some of the women in the corporate sector can understand. But what made it so challenging?
Well, I think this, well, first of all, hi, everyone. I'm so happy to see you all and nice to be here. You know, this was 2006. And, you know, I think I was pretty naive. I've been naive, I think, several times throughout my life and career. But I thought, you know, you hear about post-racial. I sort of thought we were post-sexist because I had had such a prominent position on the Today Show. I had seniority. Matt was sort of, believe it or not, a little bit of the second banana to me because I had been there longer than he had, and he deferred to me at times, not always, and that's a whole nother Oprah we're not going to get into.
But it would be interesting.
You can read about it in my book, which is coming out in about a year. I'm working on it right now. But, you know, I think that networks have personalities, and at the time, CBS was, I think, the most sort of old-fashioned, traditional, insulated network. I think people kind of bleed CBS. They stay there for their entire career, and it was just very male-dominated. I think also, you know, I was the first female solo anchor of a newscast, and you can't really, I think, overestimate what a shock to the collective system of viewers that was. You know, I was just a very different animal. I was different than, I wasn't raised in the CBS culture. I think the CBS viewer was a little more traditional and conservative. And I was brought in by Les Moonves, which is another Oprah. How many men can I mention in this conversation? And then there was Charlie Rose. But anyway, so So, you know, and I think that that people weren't really accustomed to me. And even, you know, I remember, I'm so happy that Nora O'Donnell is getting support from fellow journalists, female especially, and also has Susan Zirinsky at the helm. And I think that's real proof of the importance of having women in leadership positions, because they set the tone. I think they're more supportive. They get each other more. And I think from the get-go, I'm happy that Nora, I think, is going to have a much easier transition, not only because she's been at CBS for a while, but because she has someone like Susan Zirinsky at the helm. But I remember doing the first broadcast, and I think because it was so novel to see a woman at the anchor desk. They you know, talked about the fact that I wore a winter white jacket after Labor Day. And I'm like, God damn it, it's tropical weight wool and it's Armani, people. And I spent more on that coat than I spent on anything in my entire life. And, you know, my hair, my makeup, even Nora Ephron, which I thought was such a betrayal of my, you know, sisterhood, that, you know, she trashed my makeup. And I was like, seriously? May she rest in peace. But Nora Ephron, why are you doing that? So I realized, I was like, wow, we are not as evolved as I thought we were. And so for all of those reasons, and I also think they thought I was this kind of, you know, like Lipton cup of soup. You add me, stir, and the ratings just miraculously went through the roof. But those things take time and nurturing. And I think when they saw that it wasn't kind of instant rating success and that they'd have to be in it for the long haul, I don't think they knew how to do that. And I think, you know, I probably made some mistakes too. I probably didn't ingratiate myself with some of the people who'd been there for a long time. I brought a few people with me from NBC. I mean, you study industrial psychology. I think people felt very threatened and insecure about their own positions, which I totally can understand. So, you know, I'm really proud of the work I did. I was there for 5 years. We won a ton of awards. I kind of just powered through. You know, I think my interview with Sarah Palin was very impactful. You're welcome. And so a lot of the work I did there, I'm extremely proud of. And, but it was a challenge, at times.
But I'm wondering, listening to you and your mention of Nora now coming in as the second in that position.
At CBS, but the third
CBS,
overall
because
yes. of Diane too.
Right. But has the landscape changed that much? Has representation changed that much? I have some statistics here that really make me wonder, are we making progress?
You know, I think when you watch television, you watch cable news, I pay attention to diversity and the number of women and to make sure. I do think outwardly we're making some progress. The Women's Media Center, though, I think those are the stats you're referring to, Milan, shows that men still overwhelmingly are dominating the media landscape. And I think what is the most important thing is what I mentioned earlier, that we need more women in leadership positions. You know, Susan Zirinsky is now the head of CBS News. The woman, there's a female who's the head of Fox News. But in terms of, you know, other networks, it's still very male-dominated. At the executive producer level, I think it's still very male-dominated. And this was the Women's Media Center, their latest survey that was done in 2019. So I think, you know, only when you have true decision-making opportunities, I think oftentimes leadership positions are put to prop up the guy who is in the leadership position. You know, they're not quite at the very top. And I think many of the men are interested in maintaining the status quo. So I think we have a lot of work to be done in that department. And I don't want to have to just wait for these guys to die for it to change.
Nor do we. But most of these statistics basically showed that if we're lucky, we've broken 30% in terms of the various categories of news anchors and wire writers and social media writers, et cetera. And I think what Gina Davis has been doing, looking at how women are portrayed in movies, for example. And the fact that in any crowd scene, we're 50% of the population, right? But the crowd scenes typically are 30%. So it's like stuck at 30%, and that's real progress.
Clearly
we have a way to go.
It's very insidious, too. You know, I did an hour on gender inequality for a series I did for National Geographic called America Inside Out. It's on Hulu. I highly recommend it, ladies and gentlemen. And I took a look at various social issues. From Confederate statues to white anxiety and sort of what's going on in the Rust Belt and this transition to a more technological economy. I looked at what it's like to be a Muslim in America, political correctness on college campuses and beyond. And one of them was a real deep dive into gender inequality. And we talked about all these issues. I went to Harvard and took the implicit association test that Mahzarin Banaji administers. And by the way, I crushed it. I have no bias. Thank you. I think I kind of gamed it because I sort of figured out. I was aware, you're trying to associate gardening with women. I'm not doing that. So, but women are actually more biased than men in that implicit association test, which is interesting. Mm. But, I interviewed Gina for that. We talked a lot about imagery. And one of the movies we looked at, they worked with Google to kind of quantify the role of women in movies. And even shockingly, Hidden Figures is, the male dialogue is more than the female dialogue, if you can believe that. So there are things that really have to start out from the writer's level. And in that hour, Milan, I went and visited Juvie Productions, which is Viola Davis and Julian's, her husband's production company, to get more diversity in the pipeline and from the get-go. And we were sitting around a table, and it was a very diverse group of people. And one of the African-American producers, I said, it's probably important that that writers don't specify who's going to play a certain role. I think some people were talking about this. He said, that's right. You know, for a doctor, he could be African-American or whatever. And I said, but look, you just made him into a he. He could be a woman, too. So even people who are working in this space have this kind of implicit bias. That's the result of years and years of cultural conditioning and years of images, you know, being inundated with images. And that's really why I wanted to be the anchor of the CBS Evening News. I wanted little boys and little girls to see that a woman can do that job confidently and competently, and that, you know, it wouldn't be such a novelty. And hopefully we'll get more and more women in these leadership positions. And also, I had such an impact on the stories we covered. You know, I would say I want to do a story on dating violence after Yardley Love was murdered at the University of Virginia, where I went to school and Sharon went as well. And, you know, I want to do a series on sexual assault in the military. You know, these are all stories that were coming from me that a lot of my male counterparts would never think of. But, you know, a different perspective gives a lot more balance. And that's why diversity, inclusion, socioeconomic diversity, racial diversity, all kinds of diversity are so important, because everyone has a different perspective.
And power imbalances. You know, I think for all of the success of the Me Too movement, unless we change some of these power imbalances, we're going to continue to have these kinds of problems and those kinds of problems. But let me ask you, because we were having a vigorous discussion in the green room, and we have, I don't like looking at that clock over there, but just really, really quickly, a topic that could take hours. How is it for the journalists today with this changing media?
I think what's really hard is the proliferation of media outlets. Some are very legitimate, doing incredible work. Some are less so, and they all get kind of lumped together. I mean, I don't know how many times I've gone to my iPhone and clicked on something, and I have no idea the media outlet, and I read it, and I'm like, what? Or I see that, you know, I keep getting Joy Behar's last words. Why am I getting that on my phone? Just the weirdest stuff, and things get repeated. You know, journalism, the the number of people in newsrooms because of economic concerns are shrinking. And then people are just rewriting other people's stories and they're not necessarily going through an editor or any vetting problem process. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that are really problematic about the journalistic landscape. And, you know, when I was doing the Today Show, I started in 1991, and if you wanted to know what was going on in the world, you turned on the radio or you got your morning paper, you know, hard copy, or you turned on one of the networks to kind of get the latest news. Now, there are just a million places to get it. My daughters never turn on the television. They listen to podcasts. They go to their phones and look at the New York Times or the Washington Post or my newsletter, which, by the way, you all need to subscribe to. You just have to text 474747, and then you write Katie, and then you sign up, and I'll make your life much easier because I curate all this tsunami of information that we're accosted by every day. And
what a bargain you've gotten today, just getting that news.
But anyway, so it's tough, and I also think, you know, the media, it's so bifurcated. There are too many people giving their opinions, and, you know, people are getting affirmation, not information. They're getting their own views reflected back at them. And it's a very sad state of affairs when my friends say they watch the BBC to get an objective view of what's going on in the world. And I just think sometimes, you know, even though I might agree with some people more than others, I just want to hear what's going on, and I don't want people to roll their eyes or sigh or harumph or, you know, just carry on that way. And I think on social media, news organizations should be really careful what their reporters tweet or put out there, because there should be some appearance of objectivity.
And even though our time is up, I'm going to ask you about your media company and what kinds of projects you're involved in now, because we're all eager to hear whither Katie goes next.
Well, very quickly, what
kinds of topics are you looking at?
Well,
working on.
I mean, I think it's actually quite germane to the previous conversations, but I'm going to give you guys the abridged version. Basically, you know, I've done so many things in my career, but I love to work. I'm a little crazy. I love to be engaged in the world and take part in big, important conversations. So about a year ago, I started the very originally named Katie Couric Media. And, you know, I care about a lot of important issues. I care about gender equality. I care about environmental sustainability. I care about criminal justice reform. I care about all kinds of issues that companies now care about as well. The Edelman Trust Barometer, I don't know if anyone mentioned this today, but 76% of employees look to their CEOs to take a stand on important issues and look to their companies to usher in change instead of the government. As trust in the government and media institutions has declined, faith in companies, which is sort of ironic if you grew up, you know, where the companies were the enemies and big business was bad. But now, actually, big business is really seen as a source for good and to change hearts and minds. And again, always cognizant of the importance of images in terms of what people see. If you can't see it, you can't be it. And that's why I wanted to do the evening news. That's why I said to Brian Gumbel, I'm not doing this job unless there's a 50-50 division of labor, because I don't want to be seen as the cute girl who just does fashion shows and cooking segments. I covered the Pentagon. I know my stuff. I'm smart. I'm not going to be the second banana. And so I'm working with companies to do digital series, documentaries. You know, I'm working with Ally Financial, Rally Health, people who, you know, I care deeply about medical issues and because of my cancer work. And so I'm creating what I think is really important content that will help address some of the issues that aren't being really covered in mainstream media because they're too busy covering sort of the drama of the day. And it's a way for me to continue to have a voice. I've done a lot of documentaries. I did one called Fed Up on childhood obesity, Under the Gun, about gun violence, gender revolution, about our changing notion of gender identity, and to help people understand that new complicated arena. And so this is really a continuation of my desire to do content that really matters, that people hopefully will be enlightened by and will illuminate the very complicated and ever-changing world we're living in.
So the only thing we can all say is, you go, girl.
Thank you.
Because, you know, thank you for caring. Thank you for being crazy busy. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks,
Melania. It was great having
you. Thank you all so much.
Stay tuned for our takeaways after this break. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with the incredible Katie Couric. Check out katiecouric.com to find Katie's newsletter, podcast, and more. Our top takeaways? First, we need more women in leadership positions at the major media outlets. As Katie says, a woman's perspective can balance the way stories are told and can help eliminate the unconscious bias that often creeps into reporting. Second, we need to become more aware of this unconscious bias so that we can recognize it and address it. Lastly, although women are half the population, women's voices are still underrepresented in media. We at Seneca Women are committed to amplifying women's voices, as we know that progress for women is progress for all. You're listening to Seneca Women, conversations on power and purpose, brought to you by the Seneca Women Podcast Network and iHeartRadio, with support from founding partner P&G. Listen to Seneca Women Conversations on Power and Purpose on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please support this podcast by telling your friends, subscribing, and rating us. For more information on Seneca Women, follow us on social media, visit our website, senecawomen.com, and check out the Seneca Women app, free in the App Store. Have a great day.